I'm going to read this. As when I said it without reading, it took far too long and I wouldn't do that to you. I have to start where I was raised, on the farm, Birrali. This foundation had an immense sense of belonging and place for me. The farm was in the northwest corner of the 2J Shire and at the end of the Bolgart West Road. After the back paddock, there was Julimar State Forest. We sold the farm 5 years ago when Dad died and Mum moved to Perth. The farm produced predominantly wheat, merino sheep and Poll Hereford cattle. My family are my dad, who's passed, my mum and my mum's first child, Mike, whose father had died before Mike was one, my sister Jen and my younger brother Pete. At an early age, I was aware that there was a rhythm to life by the cycle of seasons, and those seasons determined what was to be done on the farm. Dad put the rams out with the ewes in February, and in June, 400 odd lambs would appear. He seeded with the opening rains and harvested before Christmas in time to go on holidays to Rottnest or Safety Bay. An early memory of walking back to the house from the cattle yards one cold morning with Dad carrying a bucket full of milk. This particular morning, I heard a flock of white or black cockatoos coming from the bush in the north. They weren't always there. I said, "Dad, the cockies are coming. They're passing by. I can get my shorty pajamas out. Summer is coming." It wasn't until I met my girlfriend Jane in Perth, whose dad was a doctor, and she said, "My dad was just never around when we were growing up." It was then it occurred to me that my dad was always around and I was often with my dad. I didn't cry when I was rehearsing this. My mum used to call me Dad's right-hand man. My dad wasn't an overly affectionate person. He gave us a kiss at night when he tucked us in and listened to our prayers. But I needed more than that, so I used to steal hugs from the back of the motorbike, hanging onto him tightly, smelling his sweat and feeling his chest vibrate as he'd yell commands at the dogs. I liked that spot. When Dad got sick of answering questions, he would say, "It's a wigwam for a goose's bridle." But normally he was very factual, never swaying from the truth. In the sheep yards one day, I must have been about that high, at the back of a sheep. And I said, "What's that, Dad?" And he said, "That's the ram's testicles." And he went on to explain their function. Now that Dad has died, I would never put him on a pedestal. As much as I loved, honoured and respected him, he, like all of us, had a couple of dark gremlins that lived within and tried to dominate on occasions. But he never wanted to meet them and compassionately ask, "What are you all about?" Mum and Dad were very active members of the Bolgart community. They were generous with their time and were involved in many events. Dad didn't always come to church, but he supported by giving the farm's first grain each year. Fortunately, church wasn't every week, as the Anglican minister, who was based in 2J, had to visit Kalingari and Gamelling too. Church was uninteresting. I didn't really comprehend things when the natural world was so easy to understand, as I'm a visual person. I loved St. Augustine's Church and preferred being with Mum when she was on cleaning roster, when no one else was there. One of my most enjoyable church services was after we had had a winter holiday in Durian Bay. We must have spent a lot of time at the beach, in the water, on our foam boogie boards. When I came home, the whole of my front was raw with a rash. And Mum said, "Darling, if your tummy is too sore to sit in church, you can go and find Grandpa." I was out of there in a shot. Running up past the Catholic Church to find Grandpa in the garden, with Edith P. Piaf blasting out the back door. He said, "There you are," as he hosed down a carrot and gave it to me. I was instantly healed and in heaven on earth with my grandpa. When one thinks of people who inspire you, my grandpa is right up there like a cherry on a cake. It was grandpa who first gave our family the connection with the land, and my cousin Todd is still on grandma and grandpa's farm, Brookley, Gamaling side of Bolgart. I can't recall ever not believing in God, and sometimes I feel lazy about that when I hear Paul and Neil debate things over and over. But I cannot recall not ever not believing in God. And it worried Grandpa that he couldn't believe. I remember saying to him when I was young, "Grandpa, don't worry that you don't believe in God. God believes in you and he's bigger." When I was 12, I was confirmed one evening with others in St. Philip's Church, which stands alone on the 2J Bolgart Road. Being confirmed was fine, but it was a book Hughie McGuinness, the minister, gave me that truly opened my eyes. It was a photographic book on the tribes of Papua New Guinea. I couldn't believe there were people who lived like that outside of my small farming community. It was a gift that had a transforming effect on the rest of my life. I wanted to discover the world, and did, with the farm being a stable harbour that I always returned to. I daydreamed my way through high school, but made lifelong friends as we had to board. At 19, I was living in Melbourne with my girlfriend Lucy, who I'd trained to be a mothercraft nurse with. I did go to St. Jude's in Carlton with my auntie Fran, who's been a Christian forever. She encouraged me to go to St. Matthew's Shenton Park when I came back to Perth, as she had uni friends going there. I was renting with friends in Nedlands, so I did try to go to church, but I stopped when they put me in a cell group with people I had nothing in common with. Lucy and I bought a one-way ticket to Rome, where we head south and stayed with her family in the hill portion of Italy. After Greece, Turkey and Cyprus, we got a boat to Haifa, Israel. When we got off the boat, someone handed us a small Bible. I accepted mine but never read it. Lucy didn't accept one. Being in Israel in 1983 was easy, free and deep. The places were familiar to me, like when you go to London for the first time and you see all the places from the Monopoly board all around. In Tel Aviv, we signed up to work on Stay Moshe, southwest of Jerusalem. We picked, packed, and ate grapes, clipped peach trees, and raised chickens to 6 weeks. I told Lucy, Jesus used to take himself off to orchards to pray on his own. Lucy and I weren't that holy. After work each night, we would sit in the orchard watching the sunset, while we tried to solve the worries of the world ourselves, under the influence of lots of Jordan hash. Not as effective, I'm sure. Each weekend, we would go off exploring on our own, with others from the Mushal. It was easy to hitchhike, as long as you let the military personnel get the first lift. We went and floated in the Dead Sea, camped on top of the Masada fortress, went in a rowboat on the Sea of Galilee, camped on the beach of Ashdod and along the Red Sea. After Egypt, Lucy ran out of money and there was no way I was going to London. So I stayed in Africa for 9 months, flying home from Johannesburg from my sister's wedding. I flew back to Zimbabwe to start my travels again, but the day I arrived in Harare, I was knocked over by a car. When all the bruising on my head subsided enough, I had to go back to Australia. I felt totally ripped off. When my bones had healed, I worked for a year at the Lady Gary Childcare Centre in Karawara, and I was itching to go away travelling again and be with my brother Mike, who has taught at the International School in Hamburg for many years. When I told him that I wanted to come and be with him, he said, "Fleurzo, you've got to come soon because I'm going back to Melbourne to do some more study." Ah, I didn't have any savings working with children. I thought, I have my heavy vehicle license, I'll go up north. So I walked along the terrace and asked two mining companies for a job. And within weeks, I was living in Panawanica, where I was put in on 18, the only female, with a great bunch of guys to work with. I drove haul packs, the water car, and worked as the loadout operator, where they gave me the name Dixie Hose Bag. It was an experience. I had to join the union, and I did have to go on strike, which affected my saving plans slightly. But there was no way a single girl would survive had I crossed the picket line. I would have been run out of town. So I head to Germany via Zimbabwe, where I had many adventures in another beautiful African country, and I stayed with my friend who managed a tobacco farm. I love being with my brother Mike and travelling with him in Europe and Scandinavia. I left him to go to Ireland and London, where I flew over to New York from. I was heading to Canada as I had a work visa for that Commonwealth country. I caught up with some American students who I'd met in Kenya a few years before and who I'd climbed Kilimanjaro with. There was one guy I was particularly interested to visit in Maryland, Peter. He had come here to be with me in Perth and he wanted a relationship then, but we didn't because I had another boyfriend at the time. This time I didn't have a boyfriend and I wanted a relationship. But he was preparing to leave for Mali, where he was to work for Peace Corps as a geologist on a water project. I was devastated. For the next few months, I travelled in the deep south of America and stayed with Servos families. I was running around a field in Missouri when one day, with my hands in the air, I said, "God, take away all this pain." Looking back, that was a significant turning point towards God, leading my life. I kept stumbling into more Christian people than usual. I went into Montreal, Canada, and met up with two Canadian girls Mike and I had met in Norway. One friend of theirs was going tree planting in the back blocks of Ontario. I thought, I'll do that too, to give back to the earth after all that taking from Panawanica. I worked as hard as a shearer and had an appetite to match. There was a group of Christians there earning money for their summer break. One girl, Julie, went into a Catholic church in a town where we were getting supplies from and found an NIV Bible for me. She was a bit bossy. She would tell me which bits to read, and I had to get back to her the next day with any queries. I liked reading in my tent, where I could hear the loon and the moose call. The Bible started making sense to me. Mum and Dad came and had a holiday across Canada with me. When they went home, I missed them terribly, but I really wanted to go above the Arctic Circle before going home. I phoned a guy, David, who I'd tree planted with, and told him how sad I was because my parents had just left. Dave said, "Where are you?" He picked me up from the heart of Vancouver and took me back to be with his beautiful family in North Vancouver, where his dad was a minister of a church. I got a boat up to Juneau, Alaska, travelling to Whitehorse, the capital of the Yukon Territory. I went into the office at Christchurch Cathedral and told the secretary I need somewhere to live. There was a lady standing next to me who said, "Come and stay with us, our daughter has just moved out." I worked in a receiving home for children where they lived temporarily while their parents sorted out their issues. One week, the church hosted a conference for women of the 9 Indian tribes of the Yukon. I met a minister's wife, Lee Sachs, who said to me, "If you ever get the chance, come up and sit and visit us." I said, "I might just do that." So I flew to Old Crow, a remote Indian village on the Porcupine River above the Arctic Circle, where the Chukwin Indians live. I love being in the Yukon, experiencing such a different way of life, primarily due to the extreme difference of climate. My brother Pete came home to be with me, and I thought, I'm going home. That's me. Just in a few sentences, I'll tell you what has happened in my life since then, because that was about 25 years ago. I came straight home and I started working at Princess Margaret as in the occupational therapy department as a play lady, and I worked on the burns unit and orthopaedic ward. And one night I was at my friends Gerald and Gundy Kutchling, and there was another person there who Gerald worked with at the zoo, David. And anyway, I ended up marrying David, but it was hard because he wasn't a Christian. He didn't want children, he didn't want to add to the overpopulation of the world, and he didn't want to live. He didn't want to get married. His dad had taken off with the secretary when he was finishing Hale, starting Murdoch. It was really hard, but we couldn't be apart, so we compromised. I wanted lots of kids. And he said, "All right, well, let's have one child and he'll get married." So, because I wasn't being intimate with guys at that point. So we got married and Betty McSkimming from St. Matt's found us a really cheap house to buy in Balga, which is like having all the nations come to me now that David has grounded me in Perth. And the best thing about living in Balga was across the road we had neighbours, and their three children went to this beautiful little Baptist school just across the road in Girraween. And I said to, when we had our one child, I said to David, "Can Kalia go to Emmanuel?" And he said yes, and I just thought, yes, that was huge for me, because it was playgroup and then 9 years of Kalia's life going to this really beautiful little Baptist school attached to the Girraween Baptist Church. I'll just show you a few images. Okay, these aren't very good images. Thank you to Ross, who did this for me. Now, that book that I got when I was...
Just click that little... Put your finger on that little arrow on the top. Right. Your finger on the screen.
Okay.
That little arrow at the top right.
Top right.
That's it.
Okay.
And then just click the screen each time you want to change.
All right, thank you.
On the right.
My travels didn't finish when I met David, but as long as he went to a rainforest, he was fine. And it was hard work being with David. It was not a holiday. You would be out looking for animals all day, and then all the night animals would come out, so you just wouldn't sleep. And we went to, it was called Irianjaya, and this was a village right up the top of the highlands, in Dogabuck. And so this stemmed from when I was 12. And you can see here the influence of Western influence at the back with the lady there. David, before I met him, he wrote a really comprehensive book on Australian reptiles with his mate Steve Wilson. And he, what better way to honour your child than calling her after a genus of skink? There's about 40 Kalias, and this one is from the northwest side of the Cape York Peninsula. Kalia Longlears, I think. And she doesn't mind being called after a skink at all. Longipedes, it's called. This is Kalia Longipedes. Fortunately, she's got more than a reptilian mind. This is the last time I closed the farm gates. When Dad died, Mum came to Perth and I was the one in charge of just getting it ready for the neighbour who bought the farm very quickly because he has four sons. And it was hard, it was so hard, but luckily I had 3 months. I would go in, I would lock the front gate, and I would just walk and talk to God and say, where am I going to go now when I get all peopled out, because I work with people. But I was satisfied. Some mates came out to the farm and we drove trucks and tractors and farm machinery up to Wongan Hills to a sale yard, and I had it ready for the neighbour to take over. So that was the last time we closed the front gate. And Kalia must have been about 10 there, and she loved the farm and she had a really good relationship with my father. So she, I'm so glad that she had that bit. Now I'm a chaplain. This is a bit that I didn't talk about, but my brother Pete, who believes in me, said, Fleur, become a chaplain, you'd be really good at it. And so I did eventually, and I love it. I just love it. I love just letting kids play. And this little boy, he was tossing these balls up one day, and he said, Miss, what about that man? And I said, oh, Mr. DeLeo, the principal. No. And I said, oh, Kevin Rudd. No, miss, the other one. And I said, oh, Jesus. And he said, no, miss. And I went to sleep at night, and I thought, Blake wants me to talk about Osama bin Laden. So just really good stuff. So there he is, throwing the balls up, growling at me because I didn't know who he wanted me to talk to him about. Where I have all my stuff, I have as little plastic as possible. And in this picture, it just really shows this girl. She'd got this little tiny plastic possum with these huge big eyes. She'd placed it under this rottenest island shell and put kwangdongs all around like guards, and it kind of tells you something about what's going on in her life. I think that's all. Yeah. Okay, thank you everyone for listening.
Does anyone want to ask Claire any questions? We've got a few minutes.
Yeah, that field. Southern US, what happened there?
Oh.
When you put your hands up, what that seemed like out of nowhere thing. What happened there?
Oh, it's just really, really sad because my friend Peter didn't want to have a relationship to me. But yeah, I was just yelling out to God. I'm always walking around the farm anywhere, just talking to God.
What happened?
Well, what happened? God. Oh, God's never not been with me, but I started to really think, I can't do this on my own. I'm not doing a very good job. So I kind of handed my life over to God a bit.
You ever go down to the farm?
I'll never go back. When I first sold it, I used to give myself so much pain because I'd look at it on Near Map or Google Earth And I had my hands on my hip, saying, what's this guy going to do to my dad's farm? And it's different. He's taken down all the fences. He's not putting stock on. He's just cropping. And yeah, it's just very different. So none of us will go back. I do go along Old Plains Road where we scattered Dad's ashes, but I won't go to the farm. Yes, Mike.
I'm jumping forward. You jumped in chapters. Is that what you're... I mean, what's the mix of what you're doing now with your chapters?
Oh!
And you've got the animal theme that you do too.
Well, animals have just always been in my life, but when I wrote this down, and you, when you get old, you have so much to talk about. So I had to stop because I thought, oh, I'm just going to bore people. But but yeah, there's 20 years of life after I stopped writing or reading, and I just continued on my Christian journey. And what really worked for me was I worked at Princess Margaret Hospital on Sundays, and from 8 until 8:30, I'd sit in the back of the church so no one could talk to me or welcome me to have a cuppa. And I just listened to a couple of hymns and then I'd go off to work, and slowly I got back to feel confident and comfortable being in a church. And then I started going back to the 5 o'clock service. When I stopped working at one day at Princess Margaret, there was all these people around a bed, and it was the Sunday school from Balga Presbyterian Church, and I was just at the point going to live to work at King Edward, and so I wasn't going to be working Sundays anymore. So I started going to Balga Presbyterian, and the church is literally 5 houses away from us where we bought our home. And I love living in Balga, and when I feel really sad about the farm, people humble me. And I've got a neighbour, Rashid, who grew up in northern Iraq, and I've often been around at their place because his wife is trying to teach me how to make yogurt. And I have to keep going back because mine's never as nice as hers. And Rashid says, he drives a truck, and he says, Fleur, I don't tell many people this, but I love going down to Fremantle and getting behind a sheep truck. And I say, Rashid, people protest about that smell. But it just reminds him of when he grew up in northern Iraq, where he was with his 12 brothers and sisters, and underneath his house that they kept the sheep and the goats. And so he just misses that smell. And so it's people like that that I think, I'm not the only one lost. You know, there's the whole Kurdish population who do not have a homeland. So yeah, there is a big patch in the middle. And it used to bother me having to tell Christians that I married a non-Christian. And I felt I used to have to justify that, but I'm so over that. And David and I, for 15 years, we've been advocates for invertebrates and have our own business doing that. And I did miss working with a team, so that's why I love being a chaplain at my local school for 2 days a week. And even I've never had a job where I thought this is God all the way, because I thought, oh God, what if they send me south of the river to be a chaplain? And because I just don't like peak hour traffic. And anyway, this principal called me up and said, Fleur, I'd like to offer you a job at Warrapindi Primary School. And I said, yeah, but you wanted another bloke in there. And he said, well, it's the best person for the job. So I won't be there forever. It's God's timing. I'm sure I will leave there one day.